Today, a digital news outlet trades pixels for paper, Caledonian craftsmanship gets a boost, and erotic drawing with Mag Culture's Jeremy Leslie. All that ahead today on The Stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis with me, Tom Edwards. When Quartz was established in 2012, print wasn't on their agenda. Aspiring to be a digitally native news outlet, the website was designed first and foremost to be consumed on smartphones. But fast forward to 2017 and Quartz has marked its fifth birthday with the release of its first book. The Objects That Power the Global Economy is a gift-worthy volume that manages to translate the snappy design of the website into hardback form. So why is one of the most digital of news companies dipping its toe into the print waters? And is it a sign of things to come? To find out, Monocle's Yolene Goffin spoke to Quartz's special projects editor, Lauren Brown, and visual culture editor, Caitlin Hu.
The book is The Global Economy in 10 Objects. Each chapter is grounded in an object, and each object is an entry point into a story about the global economy. And each object is not just powering the global economy, but it's also something that is really interesting in terms of design and something that you haven't seen before. So you don't likely realize how much it's impacting not only your life, but the way that business is done around the world.
A lot of media organizations are putting a lot of effort in the pivot away from print to digital. And obviously, Quartz rose to prominence as a digital medium. Why was the decision made to make a print book?
So I would say that I wouldn't characterize this as a pivot. Quartz is still very committed toward being mobile first and serving readers on a variety of platforms, not just QZ.com, but also we have various email newsletters, we have an app, and we're always trying to expand and play with innovation in terms of what we do digitally. But we've always thought about and dreamed about what Quartz would look like in print. And just like a number of our other special projects and products are thought experiments that often come into fruition, this was an experiment. How does Quartz manifest itself in print?
And so the subject, I guess, is not accidentally chosen. It's also about objects looking ahead. A book is very permanent. What was the original pitch, or what was the editorial decision that was made there?
Well, I think part of it was that in thinking about like what a book would look like, you had to think about something that would people would refer to in the future. It's an object that you keep on your bookshelf and you go back and you check it. So we conceived it as something that would sort of set a flag in these 10 industries that are changing and that people in 5 years, you know, we imagined would want to understand how the world had changed in these 5 years. They would go back to the book and be like, oh, this was the point of change. This was the object that made things different. Or this is like why we do politics or we do economics the way we do now.
And I think also it can be at times very abstract to talk about GDP and stock exchanges and all of these kind of wonky measures of the economy, which can be a real turnoff for a lot of news consumers who are not in that area, in those fields. And for us, objects was a way to put some permanence, but also to be more accessible. Quartz is trying to be the guide to the global economy, and part of being that guide is being interesting and important, but also accessible and fun and playful. And the book makes use of objects, which are, you know, you can illustrate them and you can visualize them in a variety of different ways. So we have a lot of original photography and data visualization, illustrations and charts, and it really made the case for being in print.
Yeah, because my next question was going to be about a design, because it's such a striking design. It's a beautiful book. The pages go from visual photography and the infographics and the charts, which is very much your website as well. It's very visual. So it seems to be influenced by the website. Can you tell us a little bit more about the designer?
Well, Quartz the website is very like design forward and known for that. The designer that we selected for this and collaborated deeply on sort of how to present the different content and stuff, his name is Ramon Petz. He is an Italian graphic designer who specializes in art books and photo books. I had worked with him when he was the art director of Colors magazine, and I was an editor of Colors magazine, which is a magazine that's very sort of design and photography centric. So we knew that we wanted to work with him because we knew that he could bring a kind of visual storytelling to these very economic stories in the way that would make them, you know, as beautiful as we believe them to be. We also, with him, brought in a few other great photographers and also illustrators to help us work on this. So you'll see the first page of every chapter is a still life sort of conceptual photo of the object itself in sort of a playful, like, surreal landscape that hints at what its real function is, but takes it out of context, obviously, out of the industrial context. To do that, we called on another Italian group, an artist photography studio called Mathery, who helped us sort of imagine each object's function in sort of in a different way. And you'll see that throughout the book. Like, there are some references to Colors, there are some visual references to the Whole Earth catalog, and there's a lot of presentation of the objects and the stories that we want to do on many different levels. For example, if you see one of the objects, you'll see it as this conceptual sort of surreal still life photo in bright colors, really beautiful. Then when you turn the page, you'll see it as a very dry sort of blueprint schematic of what the object itself is. And then throughout the chapter, you'll see it presented in a very variety of contexts, like within the industry.
I think something else, too, where you talk about that the book is very resonant of the site, we carried the same journalistic principles through telling these stories in print as we do online. So we're not precious about, you know, having this 800-word commodified story. We actually try not to do that. And we didn't want to do a book that was just pages and pages of straight writing. We thought if this is going to be really visual and appealing, we're going to use words economically in the same way that we do on the website. So if a story is best told through a two-page spread, a beautiful photograph, and 100 words as a caption, then that's how we'll tell the story. Or if it's best expressed through a chart and a headline, that's what we'll do as well. So there's a variety of story formats throughout the book. So in addition to sidebars and long captions and the essays that kind of take their inspiration from The Weekend Brief, where we have a kind of step back essay that brings things together, we have reported stories and we have timelines and pages that fold out where you're able to kind of go deeper into a visualization that we think you'll want to linger over and spend time on.
And I'll just say, I think that's what happens when you have like an amazing team of creatives that you can work with, because say Lauren and I want to present a data visualization of where all the satellites are outside of Earth, like the different distances that they are from Earth. Not only would we want to, you know, we think with ourselves and with the data journalists, like, what is the best way to tell the story? What's the best way to show this? But then we would work with Ramon to understand, like, what's the best way to show it visually? Like, how does it, is it kind of like spheres, like orbits, or is it better like straight lines? How would he design it? And then also working with the printers to think, like, what's the best way to tell this? Is it more effective to have it as a fold-out that shows the length of space, you know, the incredible distance of space, or do you leave it like a normal page? We had the luxury at every point in, like, the storytelling to, like, consult a lot of experts about, like, what the best way to show in a physical object would be.
And then finally, are there any other print projects in the pipeline?
So that's a good question. Lots of our staff are asking us the same question. Right now, you know, we're really just eager to get this book in the hands of as many people as we can. We're still for sale at store.qz.com and really eager to hear what people think about it. You know, Quartz is always eager for what our readers think about our products and how they interact with them. And, you know, we've sold out and are already printing more books. So right now we're really kind of focused on giving this new baby a good life. And we'll definitely, you know, assess and see if it seems to make sense to do more in the future.
Very exciting indeed. Caitlin, Lauren, thank you very much.
Thanks so much thank for you. Having us.
Time now for a look at a new print publication. Vanguards is a project by Hugo Ross and James Roberts, two graduates of Edinburgh College of Art. A couple of years ago, the sheer quality of a jumper they ordered from the Shetland Islands inspired them to set up a magazine, vaunting brands that prioritise quality and contribute to their community. The first three issues are focused on Scotland, with the first one out already and a second due next month. Here's Monocle's Fernando Augusto Pacheco in conversation with Hugo and James.
I mean, the first thing that we actually wanted to do was a book, and we'd been around Scotland investigating different brands and factories and makers, and we realised there was so much. There was too much just to put into one book or one magazine. So we thought, wouldn't this be great to do this in-depth analysis over a few issues rather than just the one issue? And we looked around at other titles and we saw that most people would just focus on one country at a time for one issue. We thought, why not give it a country a year or 2 years even?
Well, let's give us a little preview of some of the stories. For example, I was reading there's something about how Scottish tailoring is popular in Japan or something like that. That's a great story.
Before I answer your question, Fernando, it's perhaps worth mentioning that after the third issue, we are ambitious to pivot from Made in Scotland to become Vanguard's Made in England. So I just wanted to shoehorn that in there first. Some tasters from issue two. We have a really, really exciting feature commissioned by a fantastic fashion historian called W. David Marks, who recently wrote a book called Amatora. I'm going to give you a long answer here. He recently wrote a book called Amatora, which is all about how Japan reappropriated American fashion cultures. They rebirthed Americana, so to speak. And the book was an incredible insight for James and I and for so many other fashionistas out there who are into Japanese tailoring and who are into sort of heritage clothing. We sort of hypothesized that there's a similar relationship between Japan and Scotland. Whilst investigating all these incredible stories around Scotland this year and last, we've come to realize that, you know, there's a huge, huge market for all these things made in Scotland and Japan. And the Japanese market does so much to support great knitwear, great whiskey, and so on and so forth. So we were ambitious and we got in touch with David Marks on the fly, and he was really, really lovely. He put together a fantastic sort of 2,000 word feature, quite in depth, but we're really, really excited about it. His words were matched with an illustration by Flisty Marshall, who I believe has even appeared in Monocle.
Nice one. I'm already imagining Vanguard Made in Japan.
Well,
that is the dream.
Yeah. You know.
It's a power play for Made in Japan, yeah.
James, tell us a bit more about the business model. I mean, of course, the first issue was out, was a success, and now you guys are in the process of launching issue two with a Kickstarter campaign. But tell us a bit more, you know, how is it to make a magazine?
It was quite tough. I think the first one, it was something that Hugh and I were thinking about for a few months before we actually thought, like, let's do this thing. We'd just finished graduating and we had the summer before we started work. So issue one was really a kind of, let's pool everything we have and give it our best shot. And it worked, and we managed to get issue one out the door and it went well. We've sold all the copies of issue one. But when it came to issue two, we didn't quite have those funds that we had before. So we've decided to do the Kickstarter, which I think is a fantastic way to kind of gauge your audience before you actually go to print. We're thinking of it as a pre-order and a better way of understanding our audience. So that's how issue two is going to launch. But by issue three, we're going to have a more kind of robust structure for advertising. We had a few adverts in the first issue and a few more in this issue as well, but by issue three, we have we've built up our relationships with a lot of brands and businesses, so we can see a lot of our revenue coming in that way. Another thing that we'd like to do is move into a kind of more studio-based brand where we have actual clients who we make campaigns for or short adverts for, and using our platform, Vanguards, and the magazine as like a media platform to base those adverts in first and then see where they could go.
Hugo, an interesting thing here, of course, you're on the Stack, a show about print, but it's a passion for print. I mean, you guys decided to launch a physical product, not only something that was only digital. I mean, was that something that was on your mind since the beginning? Or you thought about the challenges of making a physical product instead of a website or something like that?
It's funny that you asked that question. It's not one that James and I have ever really stopped to think about, because for us, print is so important. Mm. It's never been a toss-up between digital or print.
I think time's the really interesting thing about print is that it's something that you might keep around on your coffee table for a while and go back to, but it's something you have to give your time to. If you're reading something online, you might open it in a tab and come back to it later and maybe read a couple paragraphs and go on with your day or whatever. But with print, because it's right there, you're holding it, you feel like you have to give it some time. And I think that's quite important for us because of the time that we put into making the features and the time that our writers put into producing them, that we really want our readers to then take the time to read them.
Yeah, I could echo that as well. You know, we are dedicated to this, so we want to build something that provides the highest level of engagement.
James, a question for both of you, but starting with you, James. Mm-hmm. I mean, tell us about your inspirations. I mean, which magazines or newspapers do you usually read, perhaps since when you were even younger? And tell us a bit more about some of your inspirations.
I think it's true for both of us, so we always go back to something like The New Yorker. It's a magazine that has stood the test of time, but it's a magazine that keeps changing and producing intelligent content in every issue. Its editorial voice is something we think about every time we produce something. It's that kind of level of in-depth intelligence that we strive for.
What about you, Hugo?
Yeah, I think to mirror what James just said, whatever we produce, we're ambitious that it has the most amount of integrity possible. So nothing that we're interested in, be it outside the magazine or inside the magazine, is driven by trend or driven by what's hot or what's popular. A magazine that, like The New Yorker, is just, it's long form, it's so considered, and they're really pertinent issues. And I feel like, to use the word again, there's a real level of dedication in that publication as opposed to, other weeklies or other monthlies. And it's ironic to go on that the other magazine that we probably are inspired by the most is one that we can't read, something like Popeye. It's got such a creative, wealthy influence on both of us. It would be remiss to leave that one out, even though we can't read it, funnily enough.
That was Hugo Ross and James Roberts from Vanguard's magazine. Keep an eye out for issue 2 due in November, which will explore the relationship between Scotland and Japan. Finally, on today's programme, we welcome back an old friend, Jeremy Leslie, from Mag Cultures, the man behind London's forthcoming modern magazine conference, ModMag for short. And he joins me now to look ahead to the event and to review some of his favourite titles. Jeremy, welcome to the Stack, ModMag 2017.
Absolutely.
Pretty exciting. We spoke, I don't know, a good few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Things were in their infancy. You were as calm as always as you were getting ready.
Well, the adrenaline's ramping up a bit now. We're less than 4 weeks away, and we've just finalised the lineup. So we've added a few extra names.
So let us know who's on.
Okay,
who's on the
so
list.
We've just announced the final speakers. We've got a part of the team behind Migrant Journal, which is one of our favourite titles. I'm very excited to have Justinian, the editor, and Isabel, one of the art direction team, to come along and talk about that magazine. We're flying in from the States the creative director of The New Yorker, Nicholas Bleckman, is going to join us and talk about his role there, which I think is going to be fascinating, because at one level that magazine has just always been the same and never changes, and yet it's forever moving forward very gradually. And so it'd be interesting to find out about a bit about the process, about how that moves forward without anyone realising it.
So we've got fabulous speakers. I know I always sort of push you to say, like, oh, you know, what's the thematics? What are people going to be able to take away from this? I mean, is your hope again this year, as in previous iterations, Jeremy, that simply that people come and take part in a vibrant and lively conversation and bring lots of different experiences and perspectives?
Well now it's the fifth issue, and I think we can move on from themes, really. I think people always want a theme, and I hope people will be able to come along and walk away with their own idea of a sense of what they've learned and what joins together. We're always very keen to bring together different people from different types of magazines, and that's what I mean. I think in a sense the people we've announced today, The New Yorker and Migrant Journal, sum that up. Migrant Journal, very small, new launch, that New York, one of the most august titles in the world. And it's always fascinating to see what people from such different backgrounds, doing such different things, what you find in common between the two. So I'm looking, you know, we're already got a very busy room full of attendees who are going to be, I think, learn a lot from people that are doing really good work. They can find their own takeaway.
Well, let's speak about excellence in the industry.
Yes.
You've got a few titles with you again today. Always fun to pick your brain, see what's piqued your interest.
Yeah.
I see them there. Thin and Fat. small and large, all sorts. It's the magazines I'm talking about, Jeremy, of course. Where should we start?
Well, we should start. So I have bought three magazines, and I wish I could put my hand on my heart and say by a design they represent three very different stages of magazine making, but it just so happens they do. There's one is a brand new launch, one has been around a little while and is getting better and better, and then there's one very special biannual that we know and love very well that I wanted to mention as well.
Hey, look, listen, if the selection has a bit of serendipity to it, all the better. Where should we start?
So I'd like to start. So I'm so excited for and proud of Jamie Atherton, who's our shop manager, who I've worked with the last couple of years since we opened the shop. Lovely guy. He loves magazines. It's always, we have great conversations about magazines. But he, earlier this year, kickstarted and raised the money and has just published the first issue of his own magazine. Which I love the idea of you know, the team and I and everybody involved putting your money where your mouth is and actually making a magazine. So for the Failed States Journal is a great debut. It's takes a theme each time and relies on artists and writers to contribute on that theme. And this first one is Ireland, and it's a lovely paperback format, very very handy. But talking about serendipity, it just has this lovely mix of different types of content that relate to the idea of Ireland. So there's written pieces, some poetry, some artworks. Some people have just contributed something as simple as a list, so, and have taken the theme Ireland as being as simple as a list of films shot on Fire Island. And there have indeed been a lot of movies shot out there. But then there's some more serious pieces. Paul Clinton has contributed a piece that kind of draws the parallel, looks at the form of Ireland in terms of Brexit and our island. And not only our island being cut off from the rest of Europe, but also being here in London, being a little island that's cut off from the rest of our country. So all sorts of different takes on the idea of Ireland. It's the kind of magazine I really enjoy because it's just got this, it makes the most of all the different types of content, and it's every page is a surprise.
And I guess, as you say, with something like Ireland, it's an inviting metaphor, an inviting topic, as you say.
Absolutely.
It really encourages people to think a bit.
Yeah, and it can be, I mean, in one sense, it can be quite mundane, and it can also be very, very deep.
And obviously, Jeremy, given your connection to Jamie, does it change? Because you get a bit of a different perspective about the inception, the sort of genesis story of a magazine, because you're kind of on the inside a little bit. Does that change that moment when you see the first printed product, or, you know, is it sort of more exciting, or is some of the mystery gone because you've seen the building blocks in a way?
We did talk a lot about it along the way, but I kept very a bit of distance between I wasn't involved in the creative process at all. I let Jamie get on with it very much. So. But nonetheless, yeah, I guess there is an extra fish on when you finally see it, because, I mean, what would happen if it was awful? But luckily, fantastic.
He's excellent, so it's all good. Well, that's a very positive story to start with.
So that's a launch issue. Our magazine of the week this week on the journal was an issue 16 of a German magazine called Fucked, and that is FUKT, which apparently is a Scandinavian word meaning moist or wet. And it just features contemporary drawing every issue.
Okay.
Along a theme again. There's a theme developing amongst these magazines. But the theme here was sex. And that might bring to mind all sorts of particular positions in terms of what a magazine might be.
No, exactly.
But,
with old Hugh Hefner,
absolutely, with that kind of good guy, bad guy discussion still going on. So sex is one of those subjects that can be pulled in all sorts of directions. What the joy of this is that it's just great fun.
This is a fun, unashamedly fun. It's not in that sort of more austere erotica kind of corner.
No. I mean, there's some drawings which might move towards something slightly more erotic or more kind of traditional in that sense. But it's actually just a whole bunch of different artists and comic artists, some famous. I mean, there's Keith Haring, some of his work features here, illustrators, Paul Davis, David Shrigley.
One of my absolute favourites.
Absolutely. So there's just a bunch of drawings reflecting on sex, and some of them are silly, some of them are funny, but the best thing about it is that it's just fun. It just exudes enjoyment and upbeat, and it's none of the kind of miserable, depressing side.
So I've leaped through to the Shrigley section, and I'm laughing out loud.
Yeah.
I guess that's a penis lighthouse. I guess you've got to say what you see, Jeremy. Lovely stuff. And I guess that there's an important message there, isn't there? Because we often talk about new magazines or traditional magazines
you know, it can be a very serious business, mm-hmm. but there's a critical importance to bring some levity always, isn't there? Whatever you're doing in magazine land,
absolutely,
you need to have some perspective, have some fun. And if you have a lightness of touch, that often is the key between something that sinks or swims.
Well, you know, when we have these discussions, we're taking magazines very seriously, and quite rightly, that's what it's all about. And we do a lot of talking and writing about magazines. But ultimately, they are for the reader. They have to have some sort of element of entertainment and enjoyment if people are going to make something more than, you know, not everybody takes it as seriously as we're taking it here. And I think it's important to remember that, you know, that role of entertainment.
Very much so. Sage advice, as always. Now, let's round off with... we're talking about venerable titles, and you mentioned, obviously, at the top, a sort of a new magazine, one mm-hmm. that's kind of going on an interesting trajectory, and then something that everyone admires. Not the first time, of course, it's mentioned on this programme, but...
Should we tell them what it is?
tell us why it remains worthy of our attention.
Well... two of everybody's favourite magazines, surely, are The Gentlewoman and Fantastic Man. Fabulous flag bearers for the indie scene, very successful, much loved, quite rightly so. I think perhaps in recent issues, recent couple of years or so, perhaps Gentlewoman has stolen the thunder a little bit of Fantastic Man. And that's inevitable. One of them's always going to be kind of perhaps pushing ahead a little further than the other. Fantastic Man has its kind of template that it fulfills every time, and it does it very well. It has its sense of humour. It is entertaining. Mm. It has entertainment to it, but it also has a very serious side. But what drew me to this, the latest issue, and if we're talking about timing, this is issue 26, is that they've changed their front cover, and that, you know, that's on one level is quite a kind of, oh, they've got a different, slightly different front cover. Hmm. But on another level, it's very important because both Gentlewoman and the Fantastic Man have always featured a single person, a woman or a man, for each magazine. And it's always been very much a very carefully selected individual kind of celebrities. It isn't the right word because these aren't celebrities, but important names in the creative
sort of
milieu.
Notable, you know, individuals.
Notable film
they?
Directors who are more than just film directors and that sort of thing. But for this cover, they've reformatted it, and they've got a group shot of five men. They're five largely unknown, anonymous men who I think are from seafarers from the Algarve coast in Portugal, and it just makes for a really strong front cover. Mm. It just suddenly shifts from this. They still have the big banner headline, Fantastic Man, and that against one man, whether it's the film director Steve McQueen or photographer Wolfgang Tillmans, whoever. That has stood them in really good stead, but there's something really exciting about just changing that Fantastic Man to Fantastic Men, and it suddenly becomes mm. something, a different kind of language.
And I guess talking of shifts in language, it speaks to a certain underlying editorial confidence almost
yes,
in your brand and your message, that you can play with some of these established themes and have the confidence that precisely those kind of very committed readers that you've described...
Yes.
Will nevertheless come back, and it won't,
yes.
it doesn't rock
well,
the boat.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, and as we've talked about before, but we're talking about magazines, as I have been, and we have for all this time. Actually, having the shop and seeing people interact mm. with them, this issue is selling really well, and it's just this minor sort of little shift. This has reinvented it and has made people really excited about
it. Do you almost see a double take at newsstands when a title does something?
Well,
I'm not
that hands on in
like
the
that.
Shop, but what I'm conscious of is I can see the sales figures.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what people want to know about publishers and everyone else. Jeremy, thanks. Great to see you as
Thank
always.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
That's all we have time for on this week's programme. Thanks to our production team of Fernando Augusto Pacheco, Henry Reese Sheridan, Cassie Galpin and George McDonough. Any comments or queries are welcome. Drop us a line. Fernando's on fp@monocle.com. And don't forget to join us at the same time next week. This is The Stack. My name is Tom Edwards. Thank you for listening.